folks, and thanks for joining us for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. I'm so excited to be hanging out here because I've got the best freaking job in the world. I get to hang out with my poker friends on Monday nights live on YouTube at 7:30 Eastern, interviewing fantastic folks from the poker world and just chatting about poker and poker strategy with the people that I've grown to love over the last several years. My name's Jim Reed. I'm Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim. And I am just one of the crew, the village, the gang that makes the magic happen over here at rec.poker. If you want to find out more about me and the rest of the wrecking crew, you can go to rec.poker/crew. But you can also just listen up. You're going to meet a few of them right here on the show tonight, starting with producing co-host Chris Jones.
I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5B5 just about anywhere.
I am Joe Coolis. I am at Joe Cool PhD, cool with a K, or Elvita 11 in the home game.
And I'm John Somsky, also known as Poker Geek MN everywhere.
I'm Rob Washam, and I'm Rabman 50 just about everywhere.
And I am Sasha Sutton. You can reach me at Poker for Girls on Twitter or on my study group a page on the Rec site, Mastering Mindset.
As you can see, it takes a whole group. It takes a village. That's what I love about Rec Poker. We study poker together. We learn poker. We play poker. We commiserate together. We do it all in this context of this greater community that we've made together here. Most of what we do is free, which is why I have to thank our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. And I just want to encourage everyone else, if you're enjoying the show, if you want to get more involved, get involved for free over at rec.poker. Check us out. But another thing I want you to check out is the one and only Abe Lyman. We've got him here. He's in the room. He's a storied character in the poker world, going back to Live at the Bike and the Poker Sesh. Abe, what does it feel like to have finally peaked by appearing here on the Rec Poker Podcast in real time?
This is amazing. It's a dream come true. You guys seem like an amazing group. I mean, this is actually going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait.
Great. No, seriously, dude. I'm so glad to hear it. You seem to be like a really fun, interesting character. But don't let me poison the well. If our audience doesn't know who Abe Lyman is, and if you like were in an elevator and someone asked you, oh, you're involved with poker? What's your role in the poker community? How would you answer that question to a stranger?
I'm like one of those guys and like, somebody's coming for the elevator. I like pretend I'm trying to button to keep the doors open, but you know, I'm making no effort. I'm trying to get the doors to close. Like, oh, I just missed you. Doors close. Here's the thing about my history that you might find interesting. I started on Rec Poker.
Oh, yes.
Gambling.poker. Do you guys have anything to do with that?
Only inspirationally. Okay. It's not the same group. It's not the same like entity or organization, but we like to continue that spirit forward into the world.
Oh, that's where I started. And I'm going to say 1997-ish. Rec.gambling.poker was the only place you could go to talk about poker. It might have been 96. This is like pre-2+2 or it's 2+2 infancy. Like my original member number at 2+2 was like 6 or something. There was nobody there. So I went there because of a guy named Russ Georgiev. Do you remember? Does anyone here remember Russ Georgiev?
I don't. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay. So he was like the big deal at rec.poker.gambling back in the 90s. He was basically like a full on cheater, poker cheat. And he didn't really make much bones about it. He used to give out business cards. This is how long ago this was. He would give out business cards. His nickname was Russ the Seal Georgiev. He would say that every fucking person he met was a cheater. He said Doyle Brunson's a cheater, Stu Unger's a cheater, blah, blah, blah. But he would come with like massive receipts, like on this date, at this time, in this card room, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, he had these business cards that said Russ the Seal Georgia, and his nickname was the Seal because on the business card it said, I eat fish. And basically his philosophy of poker and gambling, which was the prevalent philosophy back then, was just don't give a sucker an even break. Never give a sucker an even break. And that extended far past where it should. Let's just leave it at that since he's dead now. I don't want to like piss on his grave, but anybody who knows him knows what I'm talking about.
Okay. So that was where you got your start, you're saying?
Yeah. Russ Georgiev gave me one of his cards. He tried to recruit me since I was a young guy who seemed pretty sharp, and that didn't work out. But it introduced me to rec.gambling.poker, which then introduced me to 2+2.
Right. Yeah, and that was back in the day when 2+2 was the thing. Yeah, it was a place that, like, I think if people go to 2+2 now, they probably wouldn't recognize it because it's gotten into kind of like a bit of a shitlord, right. Like Oasis. You know, it's kind of a negative place for a lot of people. But it was the Bible when it came to studying up on poker back in the day, to communicating with other poker fans. Yeah. Was there anything like it at that time?
No, 2+2 was everything. It was like the universe. 2+2 was the entire universe of professional poker. Everybody migrated from rec.gambling. Every single person, except for like Russ Georgiev. Everybody, because we knew Sklansky and we knew Malmuth. We knew Ray Z. We knew these guys. These guys were sort of like, Sklansky is a fucking legend, an absolute legend. He's in Super System. Malmuth was exactly the same then as he is now. But nobody ever doubted that he was a winning player. He was just a fucking dork. Ray Z, legend, you know, so like you got to like rub elbows with like legends of poker on there. And the people and the real thing that was happening right around then in 1998, there was a mini boom. It was the Rounders boom.
Sure.
Most people don't who go back think that the poker boom happened in 2003, which it did, obviously. But there was a mini boom, which was the Rounders boom. And the Rounders boom caused people to go to casinos in the late 90s and all over the West Coast and America to a certain extent, even though poker really did not exist then. I mean, it basically did not exist in a casino atmosphere. And they would. It was in Atlantic City, which was like mostly stud. It was in Vegas, which was like just limit hold'em and stud. It was in Los Angeles, which was a lot of draw poker still, stud, limit hold'em.
Yep.
No limit poker absolutely did not exist anywhere. Period. End of story. You could play no limit poker for a couple weeks during the World Series. This is back when the World Series of Poker was at Binion's. It was a big-ish deal, but it wasn't like a big deal. And other than that, there was no limit poker. Then you had the Rounders boom, and people like me started going to like card rooms and saying like, "Can we play no limit hold'em?" And they were just like, "What? What is that? Literally, what is that?" There's like a card. I mean, I'm standing in the middle of a bicycle club, or I'm standing in the middle of Commerce with 100 poker tables going. And nobody in the entire casino has ever heard of No Limit Hold'em. So we had this like mini Rounders boom where people started playing No Limit Hold'em for the first time basically ever outside of tournaments and cash games. And 2+2 was the only place you could go to talk about No Limit Hold'em because there was nothing, no literature, no books, no videos, no YouTube, no training sites, nothing, zero. You could read Doyle's chapter of Super System and then that was it. Other than that, was zero. And I love Doyle's chapter, Super System. I think it's like not just great poker strategy, like homespun poker strategy done just through like trial and error and like brute force, but it's also like great writing. It really, really, every now and then I'll go back and like, I'll say like, what did Doyle say about this? Like the other day I was like, what did Doyle say about like having respect for a fish? And like, I'm like, oh, there's a big part in Super System about how, you know, you have to like sometimes fold in a situation where, you know, if you raised, you would win. Because if you don't, you're not showing the person any respect and it's going to cost you action later on. It's going to it's just not good for the game. It's bad for the game. So like I went back and it's just like written so well. It's like, you know, you got to show these people come to the casino. You got to show them respect, blah, blah, blah. The way he writes is like so smart, like to think about that stuff so far ahead of time. So anyway, there was Super System and then there was nothing except for 2+2. So, you know, like me and a few other dudes are on 2+2, like Sclancy's not really getting involved in these conversations. Mason's not getting involved. They're limit hold'em only. Well, Sklansky would play anything, but no limit at that time. Sklansky basically thought No Limit was the dumbest of all dumb games, should not exist. And he was, because he's like, just like, so like, you know, sort of Asperger-y spectrum math guy. Like, he couldn't get past the idea that there were bad players in the game and it didn't matter that the game fundamentally is a stupid game. Because fundamentally, it is a stupid game. It's like a no variance game. That's what he would say. Like, if you're sitting with $1,000 in a 5-5 blind game, why would you ever play any hand but aces, kings, and queens, or whatever? Right? You're paying $10 per orbit. You have blah blah blah. Right? So like he's right. Why would you? But that's from a theoretical perspective, but from like a real world perspective, the reason why, and he came to this later, he figured it out later. The reason why you play is because the bad players are putting in money that they should not put in. Like, why would you fucking limp, you know? And back then it's just a limp fest. You have no chance of winning the blinds. The blinds don't mean anything. So then what Sklansky came to this realization much, much later, when he actually invented the term, to his credit, I'm not busting on him, to his credit, he invented the term invisible antes. And he said that the reason that people play No Limit Hold'em cash games is because they know before the cards are dealt that the blinds aren't what you're playing for. You're playing for invisible antes that you can already basically assume are in the pot. So once he came around, he actually had some pretty good strategies, but I mean, it still is pretty funny. I think that David Sklansky probably played like 2 or 3 hours of televised No Limit Hold'em cash. If there's no way to find this shit, but if you went back and watched, it would fucking boggle your mind. He's folding like king queen suited to a single 3x raise. He's like open folding ace jack. He's open folding sevens. Like, he practiced what he preached, man. That fucking guy has got like he's not a bullshitter about the way that he plays cards. He plays just to win the hands, you know. He's not involved in a bunch of nonsense. So
you gotta appreciate that.
Yeah. He's the way that he says he plays is the way he plays. And the things that he says that he accomplished, at least to my experience, playing a lot of Limit Hold'em with him and with Mason Malmuth, is at the time they were, Mason not so much, but David was probably one of the best players. Like, he was just playing in a way that other people weren't playing. This is a long time ago. So anyway, me and these little groups of people would be on 2+2, and we would be talking about basically this new game called No Limit Hold'em. And the reason it was new, even though it was old, is because it did not exist in the casino world. In 2003, I will say, between 1998 and 2003, when it really started to come around, 2004, there was one game in the entire city of Los Angeles. The city of Los Angeles is the poker capital of the world, whether anyone wants to admit it or not. There was, because of the card rooms and the number of tables running, it's just not even close. Nothing's close to Los Angeles. So there was one game in the entire city of Los Angeles. There was one game in the Bay Area at this place called the Palace of Hayward. It is not a palace. It is a shithole. There's four tables. There was one game there. There was one game at a casino in San Diego, which is now closed, next to a strip club. It got closed for money laundering with a bunch of bookies. Not that long ago, actually. There was one game in New Mexico at Sandia Casino. And there was one game in the entire city of Las Vegas at the Stardust.
Right.
That was every No Limit game on the entire West Coast, 100%. And so me and a small group of guys would actually sort of like travel around, like real rounders. We'd see each other in like Sandia, New Mexico, and be like, how did you find this? You know, 5-5 No Limit in Sandia, New Mexico with fucking oil guys. So they like that was the beginning of like my quote unquote poker career, I guess you'd say.
Oh, amazing. Well, if you're in our YouTube chat, feel free to type any questions that you have for Abe in there. We'll make sure to get to him. If you're here, a Wrecking Crew member on the panel, just unmute and I'll call on you to get a question in here. I see we've already gotten our first question from Dark Angel. That's Donna over across the sea asking, do you know Barry Levy? No context provided.
It's quite possible. I mean, I know a lot of people and I'm not super great. Like I know like four Barrys. I mean, I used to golf a lot with Barry Greenstein. Barry's, you know, retired basically now. There's a lot of Barrys in the casino. I think it's like a Jewish thing. I'm going to guess Barry Levy's Jewish. So like, I know several Barrys. I don't know if I know the Barry Levy that you're talking about, but I probably do. And who don't?
There you go.
Who haven't I come in contact with?
Nice. So folks, YouTube chatters, get more questions in there. And of course, I'll just remind folks at the end of the show, we're going to give away a prize in our food bank support raffle drive that we do every week. So stick around till the end of the show and you can win a prize there. Dark Angel says that he ran a lot of underground games. So maybe that's the Barry connection there.
Oh, I don't. I wasn't involved much in the underground world. There was no underground world in Los Angeles then. Everything was either casino poker or real home games. There was no private poker, really. Private poker didn't start in Los Angeles until, it's hard for me to like think about the exact date, but I want to say private poker, like real, like the type of private games that you think about is like 2006, 2007. These are the games that like rake four big blinds a hand, have hookers, you know, give, extend credit lines, real private games.
Right.
The games before that were either in the casino or they were home games. A home game is something completely different. It's friends. There's no rake, or the rake is just to pay for pizza. There's no credit lines. People try to behave as friends, even if sometimes they're not getting along. Whereas a private game is like basically just like a den of inequity that surrounds a home that surrounds a poker table. You know, it's dudes trying to get away from their wife and do everything that night. I want coke, hookers, gambling, and a credit line, you know? So, I've never been a big part of the private game world. I was for a very short moment. Private games need house players because you can't have like whales show up and not have a game going. So it's not like you're an employee because you're dealing with basically criminals. The guy says to you, like, I'm going to put you in a game. We'll chop whatever you win. Okay. No makeup. Here are the rules. You're first to leave. You're first to get here. You're last to leave. You play any fucking game they say and you never complain. And then sometimes there would be extra rules. And the extra rules were the ones that made me quit. The extra rules are like, if you and I are in a pot, we go at each other like fucking crazy. We right. make it look like we're the two biggest fish in the world. I'm going to fucking raise you with a queen eye in the river for $5,000. And you're going to call me with king high. Okay. We're going to go at, because we're going to advertise that we're nuts and that the game is nuts. So they would tell you like, it's not cheating. We're not cheating. This is just, you know, action. But it wasn't for me, you know. It wasn't the way that, like, I viewed myself. It wasn't the way I viewed my quote unquote poker career. And so and there's other bad parts about it too. So let's say I won $20,000 because these games were big.
Sure.
And the host then owes me $10,000 because we're chopping it up. I would never get paid. Everybody else get paid before me. Okay. So even though I had put in all this quote unquote work, the host is paying me less because he's giving out a bunch of credit lines and he doesn't have the cash on hand to pay everybody. So then when it comes time for me to get paid, some fucking douchebag is giving him a personal check, blank check, right? He just hands that to me.
Right.
Some other douchebag has given him a Borgata 5K chip. He just hands that shit to me. Like, what the fuck do I want with a personal check and a Borgata 5K? I want cash, baby. But, you know, you're just last on the totem pole. So, I basically, after a very short period of time, decided, even though there was good money in it and a lot of people have survived in that world through these partnerships with the hosts, it just was not for me.
Yep, I get it. So what you've been through a lot of different versions of poker. You've seen the online game rise and fall, streaming you're very familiar with, obviously.
Right.
Poker in 2023. What's something that you like about poker in the poker world today? What's something that you enjoy about poker right now?
Oh, boy. You put me on the spot here.
Yeah, I gotcha. I gotcha. We got him, gang.
No, I mean, I got to be nice.
I mean, you don't have to. You don't got to. But I mean, you know, it is. We are a pretty vibrant and encouraging, positive learning community. But, you know, I don't mind roughing us up a little every once in a while. What's really on your mind? Come on. We didn't get you here to fluff you. We want the real goods.
Listen, poker, I hate to be a downer, but I'm going to say some down things. I'm going to say some good things. So just hold on.
That seems fair.
In 2007, I'm going to say, there would be 6, 10, 20 no limit games running in the city of Los Angeles. 2, 20, 40 no limit games. This is in public casinos. And maybe one nosebleed game.
Okay.
In 2007. If you looked at how many 10, 20 games are running in Los Angeles tonight, it's probably zero. If you look at how many 2040, it's probably zero. And nosebleed's 100% zero, unless it's on stream. So we are in a shrinking industry.
Hmm.
We are not in a growing industry. People will point at the entrance in the World Series of Poker, and they'll say, the industry's healthy. But that's just complete nonsense. Because the World Series of Poker is not where anyone on earth can make a living, number one. And number two, the World Series of Poker has almost nothing to do with poker. The World Series of Poker is a festival. And let me give you an example. Nobody on earth would say that horse racing is growing. Horse racing is dead. Every fucking horse track in the United States is closing. The rooms they used to have for the guys to go, but horses, the average age is 100. There's nobody betting horses. There's nobody going to horse races. And yet, to get a ticket for the Kentucky Derby is nearly impossible. They sell 200,000 fucking seats. It's standing room only. The Kentucky Derby has nothing to do with horse racing. The Kentucky Derby is a festival. It's a bucket list item. It's a relic of a previous era. That is what the World Series of Poker is. The World Series of Poker is a festival. People put on funny hats. People fucking take pictures of themselves. People make grand entrances. People meet up with their old friends. Nobody's there to make money. Nobody. Everyone fucking loses. Everyone. It's a festival. It's fun. I get it. But it's not pro poker anymore than the Kentucky Derby is pro horse racing. So if you were forced to look at what is going on with poker in the cold, hard light of day, it's a dying industry. Now, I said I was going to say something good, so you I did. Will.
Very kind.
I like going to the casino. I like my friends there. It's like a social club. I've been going there for 25 fucking years. Where else am I going to like see these people? You know, shoot the shit, argue, hang out, gamble on stuff. I'm like at the high end of old man coffee. You know? Maybe I'm giving myself too much credit for being a high-end old man coffee. I know low-end old man coffees. I'm at the high end of old man.
No one would disagree with that assessment, Abe, I promise.
And so, like, it is what it is. But it ain't a career anymore. I mean, I just got to be honest. If somebody would have come to me in 1997 or whatever and said, poker's not a career, young man. What they would have told me, and a lot of people did, basically everyone, is it's for criminals. No one ever said you're not going to make money.
Right.
Nobody ever said that. They said it was for criminals, which was true.
Well, but both can be true. Both things can be true at the same time. Yeah, okay.
But there was also a lot of normal people getting into it at that point because, like we said, of the rounders boom. But if I went to somebody right now, a young guy, who was going to take poker on his career, I would say, don't get into it because there's no fucking money. And let me be honest about the no fucking money part, because it's a little bit complicated. It's not that you can't make money. You can't make more than you would make doing something else.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's called opportunity cost. It's the sunk cost of being in a casino with degenerates, dark, dirty, wasting your life away, looking at red and black rectangles for hours on end, never passively, always active. There is no possible way to make $1 without looking at red and black rectangles. So you're going to spend, what, a decade, 20 years looking at red and black rectangles in a dying industry? I wouldn't wish it on anybody. Now, that said, before everybody gets their fucking panties in a bunch, if you have a personality that does not allow you to be around normal people, if you have a personality that does not allow you to have a job of any kind, if you are, you know, like, I mean, like a Rain Man type, can't exist in the real world, can only exist amongst games, well, yeah, what am I going to tell you? But, like, if you have the intellect and drive to fucking sit and stare at PioSolver for hours a day, if you have the intellect and drive to come to the casino for hours and hours a day, if you have the intellect and drive to have multiple screens with multiple games running of some horrible fucking illegal poker site that's going to steal money from you at some point, if you have the intellect and drive to learn how to set up real-time assistance and to learn how to have a bot army, if you have the intellect and drive to do any of this stuff, you will make money in poker. But I'm telling you right now that if you have the intellect and drive to do any of that, run. This is your chance to escape. It's your chance to do something else. It's your chance to really do something that when you look back in 20 years, you will find more fulfilling. Now, that said, if you already have other things that you love in your life, if you already have hopes and desires and a grip on what really makes you happy, poker is an awesome hobby. It's a 10 out of 10 on a rocket ship with a bullet hobby. Because it's a social club plus money.
Yeah. It's the rec, the rec side the of rec.poker.
There's nothing better than being a serious hobbyist. Being a serious hobbyist is fun, rewarding, interesting, gets you out of the house, keeps your mind busy. Being a serious hobbyist is awesome. That's what I basically am now. Having to pay your rent with your fucking poker money is a disaster. Absolute disaster. Don't get in now if you haven't got any kids. You can all say, okay, boomer, or whatever the fuck you want. But you'll think about this later and be like, Lyman told me.
Yeah, no, listen, we had this whole pro.poker website for a while. We thought, no, this isn't a good fit for us. We're going back to rec.poker. Rename the podcast, everyone. And we really do focus on, you know, the fun that you can have when rec poker isn't a career. Joe, you had something you wanted to jump in with here, I think.
No, I think that what you're saying is exactly true, because when you really look at the amount of money that the vast majority of poker players play, it's not that much higher, even if you're pretty damn good, than what meets the poverty standard or the average, I'm sorry, not the poverty standard, but the median income for the United States, right? And that's not that high. It's just around, generally around $55,000 when you put in all of what your travel costs are and everything that you need to do live. And to your point is, I mean, I can't imagine, to be honest, a worse job personally than sitting in front of 12 screens, just blip, 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 blip all day long. You get to avoid people that way. And maybe you don't have to deal with a boss, but you're still nailed down to something, and you're just your own boss yelling at yourself for making stupid plays all the time. And you end up, you know, probably worse off as a result. So I think that when I came into the poker sphere, and obviously because I'm so terrible, as everybody points out regularly about my poker play, my job is so much more interesting than poker. And that doesn't mean I don't love playing. I mean, I'm spending time doing this. But if you force me to choose between poker and my job, I'm a psychologist, by the way. You don't know me, but
maybe my wife.
That's possible. Hands down, I would go back to psychology instance and be so much happier than the game. So I really do appreciate, you know, even though it sounds negative, I think it's actually very accurate and puts poker into the place of where most people actually probably should stay. I love dreams, right? But I don't think that the poker world, because what they want is a lot of people losing money, always accurately provides a good idea of what the realities are in terms of taking a career on in poker and what the consequences are for that. So I appreciate what you have to say.
If you want to know anything about the poker industrial complex, you only need to know one thing. This one thing explains it all. There's multiple databases, Hendon Mob, Global Poker Index, blah, 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 that will show how much people win. There is no database that will show how much they paid, not how much they lost. I'm not asking for that. I'm not asking for how much they lost. I'm just asking for how much they fucking paid. Yeah, you get this? I don't even want to know how much they lost. I just want to know how much they paid. They won't even show that. Fuck how much they lost. How much did they pay? So when you see that, you realize it's a mirage. It's all a mirage. The poker industrial complex is a mirage. They will never show you anything but the wins. They won't show you anything else. And they know. And here's the crazy part. And this is the crazy part. Twice, they have lifted the veil. For a very, very short time, World Poker Tour was posting their chip leader, money, multi-money leaders. And they posted buy-ins. And it just caused fucking chaos once people saw the fucking buy-ins compared to wins. Because they're like, what? Mike Matisau's stuck $1 million or something? You know, like, they're like all these people who are supposedly famous poker players are just getting fucking buried, you know? And also for 1 year, the World Series of Poker did the same thing. For 1 year, they did that. they posted all buy-ins and all wins. And it just causes people to be like, what? Daniel Negreanu lost $648,000 this year? He won a bracelet. It caused everybody to freak the fuck out. Ruins the whole thing. It's, you know, it's like fucking getting up on fucking on Christmas Eve and your dad's out there putting the presents, you know? It ruins everything. There's no Santa Claus. It's all fucking bullshit. It's complete fucking bullshit. And if they ever posted the buy-ins, then you would know the truth. But they will not post the buy-ins because it's a mirage. It's built like any other casino game, blackjack, craps, roulette. Don't try to pretend like it's uppity, like, but poker is a game of skill. It's presented like every other casino game. All wins, no losses.
So that's what I want to, I know Joe's got a follow-up and then Sasha's got something as well, but I do feel 100% in line with that. We took a real intentional point of fighting against this pressure in, even in the training site world of the poker world, to sort of become a pro, become a crusher, you know, like right. Become one of the best players. That's never really been our emphasis here because it does feel false and it feels like it's not something that's actually.
Here's what's going to happen. You have like 10 people watching this show. Then one of the people on this panel I see is going to win a bracelet in a major event. And then you're going to have like 10,000 people watching this show. Right. And then you're going to say like, wow, 10,000 people watching is a lot more fun than 10. I'm just fucking with you. But that's how it works, right?
Sure. No, of course. Of course. There's that kind of like credibility.
Follow the money. They follow. The people love it. It's like you're shoveling shit down their throat and they just can't get enough. So, I mean, what are you going to do? If you run a training site and you just say like, let me see if I can shovel shit in this person's throat. And you do it and they're like, they want more. They're fucking, they're just like, just keep shoveling. Tell me I'm going to be richer, daddy. Right. You know, it's like, how do you stop? It's sort of a drug of like, I guess you'd say social media.
It's true. Well, that's why we don't promise you're going to be rich, but we promise you're going to have a great time. Joe, you had a follow-up there, I think.
No, just more of a comment. It's just you have to look at it as well as if it's so lucrative, right? If everybody can just make money with so much knowledge and just go crush the games, which is a term, you know, everybody knows I hate the term crush. Because
Bart Hansen is going to kill you.
You know, well, everybody uses it though. Even I was looking at Andrew Brokus's site the other day and he had it on there and I just almost started to cry. But, it, you know, when you look at it, the question would be, why are there so many training sites out there? If the game is so good that you can make so much money so easily and spend all your time and leisure, why are people spending so much time trying to teach other people how to play? And that's because playing the game is boring. And even if it is lucrative for you, it's not lucrative enough and you need a stable income that comes underneath it. And there's nothing wrong with it. I don't have a problem with people teaching people how to play, but it's just evidence that being a poker pro, as it were, is not all it's cracked up to be. Everybody always wants to even out the ups and downs and find ways to do something different than, as you pointed out, looking at red and black squares all day. Because I do think that's, you know, that's Clockwork Orange style torture to some degree. So anyway, I really appreciate what you had to say about that, because I do think there's a lot of truth there.
Thank you, sir. I'm starting to like you a lot.
Sasha, you've been waiting very patiently. What did you want to add?
Abe, I'm so glad to meet you and to hear your story up close and personal. You were on my radar several years ago through social media. I was still in New York playing underground where I started. And I remember last night I went to my notes and I was able to literally pinpoint within 30 seconds, like at least 6 or 7 years ago, you posted a checklist. It's a short list. I look around the room and figure out like what I do when I approach a cash game, and you published a checklist, and it was a series of bullets. Right. And I read it back then and I was like, huh, wow. Okay. that seems hard above my pay grade and blah, 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 and good for him. And I hope I get there someday, whatever. I read the list last night and I go, cool. Like, I play poker like this now. So I feel like it. I know. I love just, you know how it feels like, you learn and learn and learn and you peel the fucking onion over and over and over again. So I loved reading that list. Cause when I first read it 6 or 7 years ago, I was like, it just, again, it just seemed kind of daunting.
Right.
But I also wanted to thank you for talking about, I didn't live the culture of poker in the 80s or the 90s, or even the aughts. I moved to Vegas 3 years ago. But I'm so attached to the old days, and I can't explain that, except that I just think you can't get good at this game without studying its culture. And I love that you lived it. And there are guys that I meet playing in Vegas that sometimes they intimidate me, or I know they've been in the game for 95 years and they have a lot of expensive jewelry and they have that just brilliant confidence, right? And folks are afraid of them. And, you know, and then if I can get them talking, they tell me their stories and they love to talk and they know that I'm listening.
Right.
And I'm just eating it up because they're my fucking elders. And I love, they're like they made this city and No Limit Here possible. And I respect them so much. So it goes from this kind of fear and the intimidation factor to just like an honor to be in hands with them and to be learning from them and to get them to tank over some smallish river bet that I make. That makes me the happiest. And finally, I want to thank you for mentioning to Super Systems, because I refresh in Super Systems all the time. And I love the first generation of books. And I love the Ace King chapter in Super Systems. And I'm just wondering how many times I have to play Ace King before I'm not sick to my stomach. Okay. And then I'm sitting there at the table going, literally like, no, Doyle's not going to be happy about this decision, you know, but I agree with you about the beauty of the writing, and the grace of that writing and the grace of, Doyle's understanding of, respect for other people at the table and how you get people to come back and play with you. And some of the young guys that I play with, God bless them, they don't understand when a tourist says to them, like, why do you slow down there? I mean, you had like top two or whatever. And they literally start talking theory to the tourist. Right.
Right.
And they literally talking about, well, you're like, you know, you're like limp call range there. I think is kind of, you know, I think it's like weighted with like, you know, low pairs. I'm just like, I want to say, and I don't, I just want to say, stop talking. Just stop talking.
No. Here, can I give you a little piece of advice about that?
Sure.
Don't say stop talking.
No,
say something stupid and agree with the other person. So like if a person says my least favorite hand is jacks and somebody else starts saying, why would that be your least favorite hand? You know, it's in the top 10%. Well, then you start saying, well, my least favorite hand is jacks too. And here's the reason why. And just say something stupid. Just always commiserate with recreational players.
Right. Yeah.
And because totally. The funny thing about a poker game is it doesn't matter if you're right. It just matters if you're in the majority. So like the dumb people will end up driving the smart person insane. And you as a smart poker player have probably been in this situation 1,000 times where the dumb people are driving you fucking nuts. Cause they're like, I hate this dealer, or this dealer is a bad luck dealer, or I never win in seat one, or they're just saying dumb stuff. You just have to like accept the dumb stuff, let it flow through you and flow into you and then flow out of you. Yeah. Just say more dumb stuff. Right. Like whenever somebody says something really dumb and somebody else is trying to say something really smart, the first thing I do is side with the dumb person. And I say something fucking dumber. And then the smart person looks at me like, you motherfucker. Why are you doing this? And then they just realize how stupid they are. Because they're like, Abe is just fucking owning me so hard here. Because he's saying his fucking favorite hand's 9-3 suited because it's his daughter's birthday and he doesn't have fucking kids. You know? Like, and then they just shut up. Even the Euros know that I'm fucking with them. Because even though they're like basically like lizard people, they know like, this guy is fucking with me, you know? So like, It's all about embracing the chaos in those situations. Yeah, and here's another thing. I see Las Vegas in your background. So I want to say something that maybe you probably already know, but I want to talk about it anyway. You live in Las Vegas?
Yes.
The funnest thing about being in Las Vegas is that you can make money on things other than poker in the casino through advantage play. And I don't know if you do advantage play yet, but if you're spending a lot of time in the casino, one of the most fun things you can do is advantage play. So like, I'll give you some easy examples and some hard examples. And if you already know them, just tell me and you can add in. So like, there's easy sort of dumb examples of advantage play. And that is like 101% payout slots, 101% payout video poker, comp hustling the slots, comp hustling the video poker with the 101% payout. There are progressives that move to EV positive. So you can either camp out at one of the EV positive progressives, or you can become a part of a team that camps the EV positive progressives. Then we get to like slightly more complicated stuff like card counting. Now, you can't make a living being a card counter, but you can do it as advantage play if you live in Vegas, because you're going to be doing a lot of hit and runs. So learning a simple count like a KO blackjack count, unbalanced level one count, knowing the rules of the casinos that you're going into so that you know when it's time to sit down and play. So like, let's say you are going to your card room at, let's just say it's MGM. I don't know where you play. And you notice like, holy shit, I'm standing here waiting for a table. There's a blackjack table right next to me. And this dealer is dealing 80% of two decks. You look over, oh my God, look at the fucking rules in this game where they're dealing 80% of two decks. They don't hit soft 17. You can double after split. You can double on any two. You just sit down then and you just fuck them up for like 3 hours. It's like poker. You don't win money, you win EV, but you're going to, over time, having all these other little avenues available to you makes gambling a lot more fun, because you're not just stuck like, I'm going to sit down now at whatever stakes you play and I'm going to grind it out with these fucking people and I don't really want to be here today. If you look at the casino as like a giant candy land, everything becomes a lot more fun. And then you can even take it up another notch on advantage play. You can move to steering dealers. So steering dealers is stuff like you go to a game like Ultimate Texas Hold'em, which you will instinctively know how to play, although you should brush up. And the dealers don't know how to deal. The reason that dealers don't know how to deal Ultimate Texas Hold'em is because Ultimate Texas Hold'em has a buttload of fucking rules and things you have to know. So you have to, like, you and I, on a nightly basis, playing No Limit Hold'em, let's say, or especially if, like, you're like me and you play Pot Limit Omaha, or especially if you're like what I've been doing for the last couple of years and playing Double Board Pot Limit Omaha, people read the boards wrong constantly. They don't know that a hand is a chop. They don't know that the board is paired in this way. They don't know when kickers play and when kickers don't. If people sitting at a poker table don't know this, imagine how little they know dealing Ultimate Texas Hold'em. These are people that like have a fucking minimum wage job. And now they're supposed to know like, when does this kicker play? How does this work? When does this straight work? How does this work? What happens when the board's double paired? What happens when there's three of a kind on the board? Blah, 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 blah. So I'll give you one quick story about this that will illustrate how this works. Me and my friend Bryce go into the Aria. Does anyone know this story already? Because I don't want to bother people.
No, bring it on. Bring it on.
So me, because a lot of people have retold this story because there was a couple people there. Me and my friend Bryce going to Aria. It was right after the Aria opened. He tells me, I didn't know how to steer dealers at this point. I mean, I knew how to like spook hole cards and stuff, but I didn't really know about the dealer steering. So he's like, listen, this casino just opened. The dealers don't know how to deal Ultimate Texas Hold'em. I'm like, what? What the fuck does that mean? He's like, don't worry about it. You just do what I do and we'll chop it up. I said, okay. So we sit down in Ultimate Texas. This table allowed you to bet $1,000 and then you could 4X to 4,000. If anyone knows how Ultimate Texas works, before they flop the cards, you can, when you just get dealt your whole cards, you can put out four times your bet. Then when they deal the flop, then you can put down two times your bet and they deal a turn, one time your bet, river, nothing. Okay. Not super important. But anyway, we both get dealt basically ace X. He had like ace 10 and I had like ace 9 or something. So when you get dealt an ace, it's a way better than average hand. So you put out the maximum bet. So we both had 1,000 out and then we 4X it to 4,000. Now what happens is the dealer runs out the board, flips over her two cards, and the winners get the money and the losers lose, right? So the dealer runs out the board, deuce, three, four, five, king or something. Doesn't matter. Deuce, three, four, five. We both have ace. So we both have a wheel. The dealer turns over a fucking six. I'm not going to say the guy's last name. I almost said it right there. I went, yeah. He says the dealer, fucking steely-eyed, ace high straight beats a six high straight. She fucking just ships us five dimes each. It's insane. You got to have some balls to do it. But let me tell you something. The casino don't give a fuck about you. So, like, if you got the balls to do it, there's money to be made in a casino at all times. And if you're forced to go there anyway, it's a candy store. So that's what I'm saying about living in Las Vegas. Don't get down on the fact that it's hot and dusty and horrible. Look into the fact that it's a candy store.
Spoken like a true gambler. Sasha, yeah. Did you have something?
No, just say? Very quickly. Thank you so much. I'm so thrilled to hear your stories and I appreciate everything you're saying. I did meet a dealer recently who was Romanian and trained in Europe and was just a brilliant like roulette dealer. He and his wife were here for 20 years. They recently retired. But he would get very edgy. He was very identified with the casino. He identified with the profits of casinos. And right. Then Sammy Farha sat down. I think it was Sammy. He's pretty sure it was Sammy. And
did
I
he have an unlit cigarette?
No, I know who Sammy is. But I'm pretty sure he was talking. I don't want to like tell tales out of school, but I'm pretty sure some old OG pro sits down who's a card counter and just wins a fucking huge amount of money. And this dealer that I met just was so irritated that the casino let him sit down and play. And I'm just like, dude, it's not coming out of your bank account. Like, relax. Yeah. But I love what you're talking about. And thank you so much. I'll let someone else jump in.
If you try to count cards and you try to sit it in any one spot for over 2 hours, the casino is going to figure you out. They're going to back you off. Or they're going to list you as a card counter and back you off the next time you come. They're going to decomp you, whatever. They're going to do something. But if you just are playing for like in that glory range, that 2 hour range, they can't do anything to you because they don't have time to figure it out. It's a dumb thing to do as a job or anything like that. But it's a smart thing to do as part of what I call an advantage play portfolio. So like when I walk into a casino, it's basically a candy store. And I know that like I probably will just end up playing Pot Limit Omaha, but I might end up doing something completely different. And I spent 25 fucking years in gambling. Why wouldn't I learn how to do everything? Why wouldn't I? So I learn how to do everything. And whenever somebody tells me that they figured out a way to make money in a casino, I'm all ears. Doesn't mean I believe them, because a lot of it's bullshit, but I'm all ears. And if it really fucking works, I just hammer that shit, you know? And it's what keeps you young, you know?
Right. That's true. It's true. You gotta use your brain in novel ways. You know, you gotta keep life exciting.
There are things I could tell you about making money in a casino that would make the hair on your toenails curl. I mean, it goes right up to the edge of criminal activity.
Right. But that's why they draw those lines. And if you're on this side of the line, it sounds like, you know, what are they going to do? Make better, draw better lines.
Yes. Right?
Make better laws.
wherever the line is, I put my big toe right over it. So like, and I'm not saying, I'm just saying like other people, you know, they have jobs and yada, yada, yada. And that, and I, and like I said earlier, I agree with that. They're the smart ones. If you're a dumb one like me, who's in the fucking, who's, who, if I gave a resume for a job, it would just be 25 blank pages. Then you got to figure, then like, why not figure this shit out? Why not figure it out? I got nothing better to do. And if you live in Las Vegas and you have the strip as your background, I would suggest, hey, have a little fun, figure some shit out.
So I've got a question for you, Abe, and then I, we're coming up on an hour. So if folks in the YouTube chat have any more questions for him, please don't hesitate to get them in there. And Abe, we're going to have you back on the show, I think, sometime over the next little while, because you're obviously a hit with our audience. I'm having a great time. I feel like we could probably pry a few more stories and opinions out of you if we really tried. But in the meantime, one question I have for you is, because a lot of our listeners are less experienced players. When you're at the table and someone sits down that you don't have any reads on at all, you've never met them before. Right. What are some actions or some tells that indicate to you that they're maybe not that experienced a player?
Oh God. Well, you want to get me canceled?
bring it on. It's constructive criticism is how we're going to view it here on the show.
No. Do you want to like lose your YouTube license or whatever? Because I mean, come on. I can't say the truth.
Well, give us something that we can work with. Give us some feedback that our listeners can say, oh, that's me. I'm going to try and work on that a little bit.
There's a book that was written a long time ago that is a very famous book, and it's hard to find. And sometimes it even goes for a lot of money, depending on the condition. It's called Quit Work, Play Poker, Sleep Till Noon.
Sounds pretty good.
In the book, it's written by a guy named John Fox, who is the contemporary of Sklansky and Mike Carroll in the lowball days, when literally the only game that existed in Los Angeles was fucking lowball. It was like by law or something. He has a chapter on identifying good tables. I would suggest you go and read that chapter because it has not changed one bit.
Okay.
It is not politically correct. It will get you canceled. It is not woke, but it is true.
Okay.
If I walk into any casino that I play cards in Los Angeles, Las Vegas, wherever, I can tell you with 99.9% certainty what the best table is. Not only can I tell you what the best table is, I can tell you who the worst players at the table are.
Based on their actions, though, that's what we're talking about. Is like no. What I'm asking about are what are common mistakes that inexperienced players make that we can work on.
Oh, you want actions? Oh, actions.
Yeah, I'm gonna lead you right to it, Abe. I'm leading you right to it. I'm looking for.
Here are the actions. Putting on a giant religious cross, growing hair on your knuckles. No, I'm just trying. Okay. Wearing a sweatsuit. No, I can't say this stuff. Listen, the actions. How do I know that somebody's a bad player by their actions? Well, the first thing you look for is limping in.
Mm-hmm.
Because limping in is either a horrible amateur action or it's an extremely high level action.
Right.
There is no in between. Like if a guy with a backpack, fucking vegan pre-packed meal from Finland limps in, he has a plan. He is not fucking around. He is not trying to see a flop, okay? But if, like, Joe fucking Sixpack or anybody, like, that obviously is there as entertainment limps in, they're just a fish. You're just a fucking fish.
Hold on. Oh, Abe, can I just amend a little edit? Limping, you sit down, you put your chips on the table, you don't even look around to see who you're playing against, and you just post a bet. You limp in early after sitting down and being there for 9 seconds. Okay. Right. Not exactly. Just limping in, but you limp, you sit, you post, you don't care. You don't care what fucking position you're in. You right. Just put your chip out there. That's yeah, go ahead, Abe.
Yeah, that's a guy you like. And that's but here's also a thing. This is also a thing. So, like, let's say that I sit down and I'm under the 10+2, okay? And they say, do you want to post? If I post in that spot, I'm an idiot, okay? But how much does it cost me to post in that spot if I really want to give off the vibe that I'm an idiot? It costs me very fucking little. It's probably cost me like a third of a blind or something. So like, if I was gonna go play in a game, and I like, let's say I walk into Las Vegas where nobody knows me, and I go to 2550 PLO, and I'm under the gun. I sit down under the gun +2, and they say, "Do you want a hand?" I say, "Yeah, I want a hand." They go, "It's a post." I just fucking splash the chips out. I just flick them off the top of my stack like they're a fucking penny. Like it's a penny. It costs me nothing. And everybody is going to come up with this incredibly detailed analysis of how bad I suck. Like how this fat clown motherfucker, who obviously made money from his parents or the internet or something, just comes in and flicks fucking $50 off the top of his stack under the gun +2. So like, you know what it means. And so like, you can use it both directions. No, you should not do that at a small game. If you're playing 2-5 or 1-3, do not do that because you don't need to fool nobody. Okay. But if you go to play 2550 PLO and nobody knows you, 100% do that. Make an effort to do that because smart people, there's nothing a smart person likes more than knowing everything. And you know, and they can come up with a reason why you're a certain way in 10 seconds and it'll take them 10 hours to change their mind. So like there's these things all work both directions. And there's a third thing to know about this. In the world outside the poker table, 9 times out of 10, I would rather be the guy who doesn't give a shit about posting under the gun +2 than the guy who does. So like, I'm not making judgments on how dumb they are, even though, come on. It's a wild world. So yeah, if I see somebody limp, obviously I'm going to like put a little mental note. They're here to see flops and have fun. If I see somebody call, I mean, there's other things like how they play out of the small blind oftentimes is like a really good indicator because there's sort of like solved ways to play in certain positions. These things are like very much for like, I would say higher stakes games. If I said, like, let's say I went to Vegas and I wanted to play for whatever reason, just for camaraderie or whatever. I was going to play like 1-3 PLO, like 90% of my play now is PLO. So let's say I was going to play like 1-3 PLO at Aria, or I was going to play like 2-5 PLO at Wynn or something. I would just assume everybody's fucking horrible. I don't know. I mean, is that bad to say? Like, I wouldn't. I mean, it's like, you like, there's like, let me like explain why. I'm not being arrogant here. I'm going to explain why. You cannot make a living playing 1-3 anything. It's impossible. The rake is too high. So if they're raking $6 a hand in a 1-3 game, they're raking 2 big blinds a hand. So that would, in the game that I play every day, which is either 10-20 PLO or 10-20-40 PLO, if it was 10-20-40 PLO, that would be the equivalent of them raking $80 a hand. everybody on earth would say, like, you cannot under any circumstances beat a game where they rake $80 a hand. But if it's, instead of being 10, 20, 40 PLO, if it was 1, 2, 4 PLO, why do you think you could beat it if they're raking $8 a hand? It's the same fucking shit. It's the same shit. The stack sizes are the same. Everything's moving down at the same level. And your hourly income is even lower. So let's say you can make, let's say that in a 10, 20, 40 game, the lineup is so good that even if they're raking $80 a hand, I can still make $20 an hour. Now take that down to 1, 2, 4. That means that they're raking $8 a hand. That means that you can still make $2 an hour. I can make 20. You can make 2. Who gives a fuck about $2 an hour? Like, there's nobody fucking pouring over fucking Pio Solver for $2 an hour. They all suck. They all fucking suck. Here's what you do in a game where everybody sucks. You wait for the fucking nuts and you overbet. That's it. It's a fun. It is what it is. You order drinks. You drink drinks. You have a fucking good time. You bust balls. You fucking get in people's faces. You talk smack. And when you get aces, you make it 9 big blinds. And when you flop a set, you make it 2x pot. That's all you got to do. There's nothing else to think about. You just exploit weakness.
I mean, that does sound like a fun time. Like, you're painting a very rosy picture there. Like, yeah, let's have some drinks and pedal the nuts.
When I go play a small stakes game, that's 100% of what I do.
Yeah.
If I play in a high stakes game, it's a different story because now you got, you know, people who will try to scrounge out a tiny fucking amount of money for that game, like 1 big blind. Because 1 big blind's a lot of money in a 10, 20, 40 game. It's $40 an hour. $40 an hour is $80,000 a year. For some guy from fucking Romania, $80,000 a year is a lot of money. From some guy from Brazil, $80,000 a year is a lot of money. You know, they will fucking go on Pio fucking Solver and they will pour over analysis for that 1 big blind. But in a 10 and a 1, 2, 4 game, come on, have a beer, overbet the nuts, talk smack. You're playing for fun, right? Because you can't be playing for a living. So that's impossible.
All right. So, Sasha, you've got one more thing, and then we're going to throw to a couple YouTube questions. And,
okay, really quickly, Abe, I just want to say what I love about everything that you're saying in particular is just I feel like when you're talking about sitting down and having enough years in the game and enough just understanding the table dynamic that you can sort of mess with your own table image and kind of determine what you're going to be projecting. But I feel overall what you're talking about is meta and the meta of games, not in kind of a like a pretentious way. But I feel like poker is still, for me, is pure, mostly nine-tenths of the law. It's pure meta. I respect the study that some people choose to do, depending on their context, depending on the games you play. But I feel like what you're describing, and there's a reason why I'm so attached to the old days, is you're describing a notion of you know, in I, you know, that there's, it, there, it, it, it's an organism that you don't just enter in this kind of very studied and very serious and very silent way. And I love that you're calling that out. And this is how I live the game. And this is how I talk about the game. And this is how I, you know, try to make it a place and an experience that other people can take some of the joy that you're describing from. So thank you.
I mean, yeah, there's obviously, like, if you're going to play a 100K buy-in super high roller and you haven't spent 1,000 hours with solvers, push fold charts, fucking, what's that called? Chip values, level increases. I don't even know what it is because I don't play terms. But if you haven't spent thousands of hours on that, you're just a fish. Because Ike Haxton and Lucky Chewy and these guys, they're going to eat your lunch over the long run. But if you're going, and here's the thing that sometimes freaks people out when I tell them, you cannot make a living playing tournaments in reality. It's impossible. And I could go over the math of it if you guys want, but it's mathematically impossible to make a living playing tournaments. It is easy to make a living if you want sort of a, like we discussed, not great living, playing cash games. So you would think you can make a living playing cash games. You cannot make a living playing live tournaments. Cash games must be more complex than live tournaments. It's the opposite. There is no form of poker more complex than live tournaments. Live tournaments or online live tournaments are sort of the same in that way because there's no, because they're just structured jobs, basically. The amount of things you need to know to play tournaments is infinitely higher than the amount of things you need to know to play cash games. In a cash game, you know, you don't need to know anything about pay jumps. In a cash game, you don't need to know anything about relative chip value. In a cash game, you don't need to know anything about push fold charts. In a cash game, of a bunch of situations for different pay jumps and stack sizes, the way that you do in tournaments. Tournaments are insanely complex. And that's why at the highest level, the best players in the world play these super high rollers. Because in a super high roller, each decision, each one of these little tiny decisions is worth enough money to study it. It's, if you're playing a $100,000 buy-in tournament or $200,000 or $500,000 or $1 million buy-in tournament, studying these things is worth it. If you're playing a cash game, none of that stuff is worth it. None. Zero. No, it doesn't make any fucking difference. Here's how you play cash game. Here's how I play cash game. And I made a lot of money over a very fucking long time, and I got the receipts to prove it. Here's how I play. I go to the casino with the most games running. I walk into the casino. I look for the obvious worst table, which I won't tell you why it's the obvious worst table because I will get canceled. I go and sit at the obvious worst table. I play, I act loose and play tight. That's it.
Yep.
So what is hard about this? There's one hard thing about this, and this is the hard part. Hard part number one, it might be very high stakes. So you got to be prepared for that. Hard part number two, rich people don't give a fuck about you or your opinion. So if you go and you say, this is the best table in the casino and they're playing Omaha, I'm good at Omaha. You sit down. Rich guy says, let's play five card Omaha. Well, guess what? Now you're playing five card Omaha. You're playing, you little bitch. Don't complain, you little fucking bitch, or we'll have you thrown out of the casino. Because poker at high stakes is played by the golden rule. And here's the golden rule at high stakes. The guy with the gold makes the rules. Okay? So it's harder than you think, but it's not hard in the way that you're thinking. You have to be able to navigate high stakes poker culture. Navigating high stakes poker culture is a very specific skill that might be as hard as what Ike Haxton and Lucky Chewy do. I don't know, because I don't do what they do and they don't do what I do. So, like, I go in the casino, I look around, I see what the best game is, and then I go play in it. It could be stud, it could be draw, it could be Omaha, it could be two-board Omaha, it could be Hold'em, it could be Raz, it could be a mixed game. I don't give a fuck. Like I was saying about, like, advantage play. What else do I have to do? What else do I have to do? I chose this goddamn life. And now I'm going to sit there and cross my arms and put a pouty lower lip and say, like, I'm not learning Raz. Listen, Sheikh Ali Muhammad. I don't care. I'm not learning Raz. I'm not allowed to get unlimited straddle. That's not poker. You're straddling too big. So I'm giving, like, these are things I've actually heard people say, by the way. Right, right. And so, like, that's how making money in the real world works. in this world we live in now, you know?
Yeah.
Not cheeseburger steaks. We're talking like a solid six-figure income to get you a nice house on a hill in Los Angeles.
Yeah. No, it sounds good. I mean, a lot of us are here preaching the cash game world because it's lower variance. You know, I think it's more fun. I love the way you're talking about it being like ultimately a simpler game. We had a bunch of other questions in the YouTube chat here, but it's episode 525 of the Rec Poker Podcast. We're going to have you back before we hit another 500 episodes. We got some great comments from Kevin Clarkson. And if he's in there. Kevin's in there.
No.
We got some fun comments from him we're going to get to later. And if that's actually Chip Extractor, Steve Catterson. Steve, yeah, thanks
Chip
for joining me.
Chip Extractor's a buddy of mine. Kevin Clarks is an acquaintance of mine.
Well, they had some great questions, and there was a bunch of other great questions as well coming through here. But we're running out of time. And Abe, you've been so generous to give us almost an hour and a half here already. Thank you so much. Let me just ask you this, I guess. If folks want to get in touch with you, or what can our listeners do that you would appreciate? If people are listening to this and they're like, oh, well, that was really great interview that Gabe gave. How can we show him some love or make his life better in some way? What would that be?
If you see me, buy me a beer. And don't worry. I will always buy the next round.
All right. There you go.
I'm not even asking for anything.
It's true. He's just looking for an excuse. I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
So there, you got that circled. Also, there's always the offer to buy John Somsky a beer. I just want to point that out just in case anyone's guessing. That still is available. Two more quick questions for you, Abe. If folks want to reach out to you, what's the best way to do it? Social media, email, smoke signals, key your car. What's your preferred method of communication?
If you see me, buy me a beer.
All right. That sounds good.
You just told me the people in the chat, and I don't want to talk to them.
Yeah, all right. Well, we will get them back at some point. I had a really fun time tonight, Abe. Thank you. One question I want to ask you to leave you with before we go. Looking back on a fantastic life, whether this has to do with poker or outside of poker, what's one thing you would do differently?
I've talked about this before. If normally I'm like a no regrets, no change, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger type guy. And normally I'm really fucking happy with the decisions I made in real time, even looking back.
That's a gift.
It doesn't mean I was right. It means like I analyze the situation. I say, knowing what I knew then, would I have changed it? What was I overlooking? Was I being myopic? Yada, yada, yada. And 9 times out of 10, I say like, what was I fucking supposed to do? I'm not fucking Nostradamus. There is one thing though that I was 100% wrong about, and I could have known it in the time, but I was being too strident in my outlook on life. I was being too like, what is that called? Like, I don't know. It's not, the word isn't naive, but it was, I had an idea of the way the world was supposed to work, and this is the way the world's supposed to work.
Like idealistic. Yeah.
Idealistic. So when I started playing poker, I had this idealistic idea of the way that poker worked. And it was basically based on like me, I'm not going to join a cheating team. This, don't worry. This doesn't get bad. This gets good. I was going to play cash game pokers. I was fucking going to study. I was going to be a serious student in the game. I was going to like beat the old timers because they always went with their gut. And like, I was going to learn the new ways of doing things. And I was going to be a winning cash game player. I was going to be a fucking cash game legend. Okay. 2003 hits, poker boom. Idiots, fucking morons, the worst fucking cash game players are playing in tournaments because it's the most popular thing to do. They're playing in these tournaments because they suck at poker and they don't give a shit where they play. They just want to have fun. They just want to be part of something big and exciting. They want to be on TV. They want to be on the World Poker Tour. They want to be on the World Series of Poker. They want to win bracelets. They want to just nonsense. Things to me just seem like nonsense. It, to me, it just seemed like, oh, what's all this fucking nonsense? I'm with the guys with the cigars. I'm with the guys with the beers. I'm with the fucking big stacks of checks that you can take to the cage, not stacks of checks that are worth fucking zero. Okay? I'm the real poker player, and you guys are the fake poker players. Okay? I was wrong. I should have fucking played tournaments. Because the guys who embrace stuff like that, like the Daniel Negreanos of the world, the Chris Fergus, he's fucking cutting a banana in half with a fucking playing card. Chris Fergus of the world, the Howard Letters of the world, even though like he's probably a scumbag. His sister, Annie Duke, was fucking scumbag. Like, regardless, these people made so much fucking money. They were a few years ahead of me, and they were thinking way outside the box. They had already reached the point that I would reach later, where it's like, poker doesn't matter. What matters is having all the money.
Mm.
Poker is a vehicle to have all the money. The way to get all the money is the rake. Okay? This is where all the way to get all the money is through selling shit. The way to get all the money is through the training site. I'm not going to fucking go out and bust my ass and break my back mining for gold, pickaxing into the ground. I'm going to sell all you idiots the pickaxe. I'm going to get all the money. So if I had it all, like with my just general being, like everybody fucking knows me in the casino. Everybody fucking knows me wherever I go. With my general persona, which is not a fake persona. It's the way that I just am. I can't help it. For better or worse, I'm profane. I'm lewd. I'm not woke. I have a lot of fucking problems. I'm fat. And it's hard to be my friend because I'm always going to try and take money from you. Win. But with all my general good things about me and bad things about me, one bracelet would have been worth $5 million.
Sure.
Easily. Yeah. It would have been Daniel Negreanu money. It would have been Chris Ferguson money. Chris Ferguson's worth $80 million. Do you know that? Chris fucking Ferguson's worth $80 million. But you know what? Hindsight's 2020. My life is good. But I should have fucking won a bracelet. not that I give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. But the training site, the sponsorship deals, 2003. I was there when it was happening. It's not like I'm saying 2011. I was there in 2003. I was there when Mike Matisau was making money, and he fucking can't play poker. Whatever.
Well, Abe, thanks for never sugarcoating it. I think we knew what we were in for today, and I'm clearly not disappointed. This was a fantastic interview. I love picking your brain, and I really want to have you back sometime soon. I think we've got a lot more questions to ask, and you've got a lot of entertaining stories and opinions to share. So if you see the guy, buy him a beer. That is his requested method of communication. He's also back on Twitter at Lyman Poker, L-I-M-O-N Poker. And he's also a fun character on Reddit, if you're over there as well. I know I am. For my sins. Abe, thanks again for joining us. We're going to spend the next 5 or 10 minutes just talking about some home game results, and you're welcome to stick around for that. But I'm sure you've got other things on your mind. Feel free to just jump on out of here, too. Thanks again for your time. This was a great conversation.
Well, believe it or not, I've got nothing better to do. I'm going to go and I'm going to take a leak and I'm going to come back. And if you guys are still talking, I'm just going to listen to you and maybe pipe in.
All right. That sounds good.
This is the old Johnny Carson thing when he invites you to the couch, right?
Yeah, that's it. Feels like that. It feels very natural.
I've been invited to the couch.
You have. That's right. The interview's over, but you don't have to go. Get comfortable.
The only difference is I'm going to take a piss on the couch.
That's right. Well, it's your couch. So, you know, I'm not going to tell you what to do in your own home. And as my dad liked to say, I hope everything comes out okay.
It is. Now, all right. unlike when I took over Todd Witella's show. He's a total fucking moron, by the way. I'm not going to make you guys listen to it. Have your fun. I'll be back in a couple minutes.
That's very generous. Thanks, Abe. Well, that's the Abe Liveman interview, folks. At least episode one of two. I do think we're going to have Abe back sometime soon. Folks, start typing the words food bank into the YouTube chat. We're going to roll a die here in just a moment and give away a prize. Someone's going to win a free month at Rec Poker Premium or at Learn Pro Poker or PokerCoaching.com or the Tournament Poker Edge, one of the great sites that we work with. And then we've got another session that our wrecking crew needs to host coming up pretty soon. So, John Somsky, why don't you roll us through some recent home game winners? And then Chris will roll the dice of infamy, and we'll see who our winner is going to be this week on the DisoCam.
All right. Well, the first Wednesday of every month is our No Lip Hold'em Championship Series, which you get points for to count towards Player of the Year. And on October 4th, TechGeek65, Jacob Peakey,
got
his second No Limit Hold'em tournament victory for the year.
Beast.
Bone Crusher 14, Marcel Dusik, is still in the lead by almost 10 points for the Player of the Year.
Wow. Amazing.
Then we have JD Cat 32, Jeff Catalano.
Nice. Way to go, Jeff.
Nightly victory for the year. Denice Aces, Denise Allen.
Denise.
Got her first nightly victory for the year.
Amazing.
Larson opening, George Borden, got his fourth international victory for the year. Bagman 73723 got his or her first international victory for the year. And E. Anderson 85, Eric Anderson, won the LPP event. So he can contact info at rec.poker for his free month at Learn Pro Poker.
That's right. Congratulations, Eric. You've earned a free month at Learn Pro Poker, and you're going to love all the great stuff that they have available there. Send that email info@rec.poker, and we'll get you all sorted out. So, folks, if you're a new listener or a new watcher here in the YouTube chat, I see a few people are typing in the words food bank. That's great. We do a little raffle at the end of every show because we like to support the cause of a food insecurity, fighting the fight against food insecurity, particularly in North America. It seems a little unreal, but there might be people in your own neighborhood or your own community that need a little help putting food on the table, or putting food on the table of their loved ones. And even here in, otherwise wealthy areas, there's still people that need a lot of help, particularly these days. Some dogs even need a little help, getting the kibble in the bowl, as you can see, if you're on our YouTube channel. So we just like to do a little raffle here to promote some awareness for this cause of food insecurity in North America. And we're going to give away a prize to folks that just type the words food bank into the chat there. So thank you for doing that. Chris, I see some fancy new nerdy dice. Those they'll read very well.
Yeah, there were some complaints about the dark dye and maybe there were some shenanigans going on. So
been bamboozling.
Rec Poker purchased me a fancy new set of die that could show up on camera better. So here
amazing
we are.
And Chris, how would you describe the colors of those dice, just out of curiosity?
I guess gold and black.
Yeah, they are. They sure are. And you chose them, sucker. I didn't even put that out there. But once he put out the Steelers colored dice on the chat, I was like, oh, make that order, sir. Make that order. All right. So I see of the people in the YouTube chat that are available to win our prize tonight, just to go through so there's no bamboozling, the RRRCCC, Stuart Carriage, K-Poker Wannabe, McKay Agnes, Jeff Cat, and Luke O. That's six. That's a boring old boxcar.
I'm rolling the boxcar.
All right. Let's see what the DisoCam will reveal. It's a four, and it's clearly visible to everybody. So let's see. That's one, two, three. Make Agnes. I hope I'm saying your name correctly there. It might be McKay Agnes. Congratulations. You have won a prize. If you send an email to the email address info@rec.poker and just say that you won the food bank raffle on the podcast this week. We'll get that prize off to you in no time. And congratulations. And thank you to everyone for participating tonight. A huge thanks to Abe Lyman for sharing his time and his words of wisdom with us. Obviously, Chris, Rob, John, Sasha, and Joe, I couldn't do it without the Wrecking Crew members. Some fantastic new folks here in the YouTube chat. I'm excited to see them. I hope you had a good time. It's Mike Agnes. Of course it is. We'll send that email, Mike, and we'll get you that prize. I appreciate it. Thanks to the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. It's Hallow Screams tournament event coming up from October 18th to 22nd in Columbus, Minnesota. Don't miss that. Events, the buy-in is only $360, and there are some preliminary satellite events happening as early as this weekend. And then turn around, it's their Big Turkey tournament series from November 9th to 12th with an $800 buy-in. That's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks to everyone in the YouTube chat. Thanks to all our listeners at home. We couldn't do it without you. Abe Lyman here on episode 525 of the Rec Poker Podcast. We'll see you next week and everyone else. And just thanks for having a great time with us today. Take care, everybody.